Hello, and welcome to the Grace Point Church of Paradise podcast. I'm so glad you're joining us today. Here at Grace Point, we believe that every story matters, and our heartbeat is to develop fully devoted followers of Jesus Christ. Wherever you are on your faith journey, curious, wrestling, or growing, our prayer is that God meets you right here, right now. So welcome to Grace Point. Here's today's message.
Our series, if you've been with us for a couple weeks, we're in this series called When Worry Wins. It's really a series about anxiety. And as I confessed, I had anxiety putting this series together. And if I have to be honest, I even had anxiety this morning as to whether this last part is going to land or not. And I think that is just, I just want to admit my own humanity in this process. I've been leaning on a number of resources to help with this. One is Jonathan Haidt. He wrote The Anxious Generation. I've referenced him a lot. Some of you have read his work, and this is what he said. He's an agnostic. He's not a believer, but he said this: anxiety and its associated disorders seem to be the defining mental illnesses of young people today. And in his book, he'll go on to explain why that is, and with a lot of data, a lot of detail, it's a very convincing argument for the power of anxiety, particularly in this generation. And if you're older than that, you're also allowed, like I am, to be someone who struggles with anxiety, with worry, with wonder and fear and concern, all right? And so what we've done in this series is I've tried to be clear that I am not a therapist, I'm not a psychologist, not a counselor, but I am a pastor, and so I'm trying to speak at that level as a pastor to this situation. And so we've asked a couple questions. The first question we asked in the week one was, what is anxiety? And in there, I essentially said anxiety is like the anticipation of future threat that's kind of been brought into today. It's anticipating future threat. It's different than fear. Anxiety and fear are different. Fear is, as I've used this illustration, if you're on a hike in the woods, you go around a long bend, and around that corner, there's a bear standing in the way looking at you, and you know it's hungry. Fear. If you're on the way to the hike, and you know that there have been no bear that have even been in this state for 180 years, and you feel like there might be a bear this day, like who knows, and on the way there you're living with this, that's anxiety, all right? It's anticipating that a future threat that is not yet on me might be on me, so I need to gear up today. And the problem with anxiety is that it engages all of the parts of our body that tell our bodies we are under current threat, even though you're not under current threat. It's like, get ready and gear up. And so all of our body's defense mechanisms start kind of gearing up. And the problem is, if, as a young generation and an older generation, we keep living under constant threat, it is exhausting. It wears us out. We can't sleep. We don't relate well to one another. It is a serious problem for us. So if we're constantly living under anxiety, what can we do, right? So here's what we said. Anxiety is the anticipation of future threat. From a theological level, as a pastor, here's what I tried to frame up. That we were made for life in the garden. And in Genesis 1, we realized, in Genesis 2, in Genesis 3, we realized that we were, through Adam, kicked out of the garden. And we, in the garden, we're made for life unhindered with God. An intimate fellowship with him where he will provide all that we need for strength and support. And as soon as you're kicked out of that garden and you're looking at the world, there can be a question like, oh no, now what? There's a future threat, I'm anticipating it, and we get anxiety. What is it? So when we ask the question here, what fuels it? If you go back to that image of Adam being kicked out of the garden, there can be not only this anxiety that comes from that break, but what fuels it is this feeling that when you're out of the garden, it's now up to you to protect yourself. All of the future is dependent on you. You need to be good enough. You need to be strong enough and smart enough and wise enough. Don't make the wrong decisions that will cost people that you love. And it all depends on you. So it's what fuels it is this invitation to be your own God, while knowing that you're never going to be good enough to be God yourself. And what a horrible thing to live with. You're living with this pressure. Be better. Try harder. Don't make that decision again. Be better. Try harder. Don't blow it again. What fuels it is this realization we're outside of the garden. We're kind of on our own. We've got to figure it out. This invitation to become our own God. That's what fuels it. Today, I want to talk about this question. What is it that I can do about it? What can I do about it? So out of the garden, what can I do? Let's get practical. So today is going to be practical. I definitely want to take it to practical. I hope that by the time you leave, you'll feel that that is the case. We've gotten super practical today. But before I do that, I want to give you an illustration. Because we want to talk not just about what you can do. I want to talk about what you can do in the context of what God wants to do with you. All right? So let me put it another way. If you're kicked out of the garden, picture that image. One of the questions I ask is, how does God meet us outside the garden? It's not just that God is in the garden alone. Now that we're kicked out, does God meet us outside? And if so, how? So here's the illustration. I want to use a biblical illustration before I jump into the practical how to do something. I want to go to Deuteronomy. And don't turn there yet in your Bible. I'm going to throw it up here. I want you to picture what's happening. What's happening in this moment is Moses, who's been a leader of the nation of Israel for years, is about to pass the baton on to his protege, Joshua. And Joshua has been following Moses for 40 years and knew that at some point he would take over the mantle of leadership. And it's this moment in the nation of Israel where Moses is going to call him forward and say to everybody in the room, like, Joshua, you're the man. They're on the cusps of going into the promised land. They're right on the edge of it. And Joshua's about to step up and Moses is about to hand things off to him. And here's what we read in Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 7. Then, sorry for you guys, I hope my head's not in your way. Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all Israel. And here's what he says to Joshua. Imagine you're Joshua for a minute. Come on up. You're in charge. Here's what I want you to do, Joshua. Be strong and courageous. For you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their ancestors to give them, and you must divide it among them as their inheritance. That's his charge. What's he supposed to do as the leader? Well, here it is. Be strong, number one, and courageous. And if you're a normal human being, you'll read that and be like, oh no, like the pressure is on. Right? I mean, isn't the pressure on? All you have to do is wake up every day and be strong and courageous and lead a whole nation to the land that God himself swore to their ancestors to give them and divide it among them as their inheritance. I mean, never mind that it's currently populated. I mean, just whatever, you know, just that's all you got to do, right? So if this is all that Joshua gets, he's got a problem. Because all this becomes then is a cycle of do more and try harder, do more and try harder, do more and try harder. What happens in Deuteronomy 31:8 is what I want to highlight for you and use as an illustration for the rest of the message. All right? In Deuteronomy 31:8, Moses says this to him, the Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. I'd like us to do a little audience participation. You see the first sentence, the first phrase, it goes till the semicolon that ends with the word you. You see that? Good. Let's read that together on three. One, two, three. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. That is the message of God for people outside of the garden. He goes before you, meaning he is in a future place that you are not yet. You are not there yet. And that is where he is. And he is with you where you are. He both goes before you to the land of future threat, and he's there. And he is with you. How does God meet you out of the garden? This is how he does it. This is the story of God throughout the Old Testament. Into the New, let me make this even more, I hope, powerful and personal for us. We wonder sometimes, how does Jesus come into this? Here's exactly how this works. In Romans chapter 12, this is an exciting thing I wanted to say. In fact, I said it, but my thing, anyway. All right, so what I'm trying to say, I'm going to go to Romans, but here's what I'm trying to say about this thing, that God is already where anxiety thinks you'll not be enough. God is already where anxiety thinks will not be enough. So as you look forward in your life and think, I'm not sure I can be enough when I go ask the girl out, or if I go get another job, or whatever the thing is, this is what Moses is saying to Joshua. God is there where anxiety tells you you're not going to be enough. That's where God already is. And he is both here in fear and there in anxiety. He's here in fear. There's something I'm actually afraid of. He's here. And he's there in anxiety. He's in both places. Okay? So powerful illustration, I hope, for what God does in Deuteronomy. Now, let me go to where I went a little prematurely, to Romans. All right, Romans chapter 5, verse 12, helps us understand something about Jesus. Here's what we understand about Adam from Romans 5. Therefore, sin entered the world through one man, and that one man is Adam. And death through sin, and in this way, death came to all people because of all sin. Paul is telling us, he's going back to the garden. Remember, we were in the garden. Adam sinned, and he's kicked out of the garden. And what Paul's going to say is sin entered the world through that one man, and through and death through that sin. And so we all, because of what Adam did, Adam introduced to humanity sin and death. And then he goes on, just in the next verses, to tell us that Jesus is the new and better Adam, and Jesus basically redoes, if you will, what Adam does. Adam brings sin to all humanity, and Jesus brings the gift of grace to all humanity. Here's what he says in Romans 5:15. For if the many died by the trespass of the one man, that's Adam. This is kind of confusing, so stay with me here. The many died by the trespass of the one man, that's Adam. How much more did God's grace and the gift that came by the grace of the one man in Jesus Christ overflow to the many? How much more? In other words, if through Adam, and he steps out of the garden, he sins, and then we all get stuck with the future anxiety, right? We all get stuck with sin. We all get stuck with death. How is it that God, through time, like Moses told him that he was going to do with Joshua, how is it that today, for you, how is it that God comes alongside you now? You're not Joshua, nor am I. How is it that God comes alongside you now? He comes alongside you through the person of Jesus, who says, I'm going to meet you here, and I'm going to undo all that Adam did. I'm going to offer to you the opportunity through faith to believe what I've done. Adam brought anxiety, fear, sin to you, and I'm going to introduce you to a way back. I'm going to come alongside you. I'm going to be with you now and in the future. This is the role that Jesus plays. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say? Nodding heads are fine, even if you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. This is the time to nod the head. This is important for me because what I'm about to get into is very practical. I'm going to give you an acronym to try to help you remember some things you can do with your own anxiety. But my message to you is not do more and try harder. Okay? This is not do more and try harder around anxiety. This is understand what God has done for you in his great grace. He meets you outside of the garden through Jesus and invites you by faith to trust him. And he's going to walk with you as you do some of these things. But you are not saving yourself if you do the next several things that I encourage you to do. I encourage you to do. But it is not outside of the context that God has come for you through Jesus to undo all that Adam has done, to invite you to follow him. Does that make sense? Yeah, we'll see. Okay, so here's what I want to encourage you. Okay, that's a little bit about God, what he does. Now, what can we do about it? I want to encourage you, as you face anxiety, I want to encourage you to pace yourself. Now, this is as practical as I can get it, and we can go from there. What do you do when you're facing anxiety, when you're right up on it, when you're feeling it, you're kind of in a moment of, you name it. It can be full of all kinds of things. Financial troubles, relational issues, spiritual wonders, marital problems, career issues. I mean, it's all over the place. It's all over the place. What can you do? First thing is this. I want to encourage you, step one, and pace yourself, is to pause. Week one, we talked about this. I encourage you to pray through Psalm 46:10. In a brief, what I call breath prayer, which if you were there, you know this, it says, be still and know that he is God. Practice breathing in, out, in, out, in, out. Before you let anxiety run over you, I promise you, if you will take a moment as you're getting ready in the morning and look in the mirror and your hair is all messed up and you're like, ah, today, I can't have that today. You know, I'm not sure what I'm going to say to my boss when he or she asks this. I'm not sure I'm ready for the presentation. I don't know how I'm going to handle the finances. I don't know if I can ask the girl. Or I don't know if I'm ready to dump the guy. I'm afraid of what's going to happen. You know, all the stuff that sits in you with anxiety. Before you just give it space, pause. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. Breathe out. Be still. And know that He is God. Anxiety does not get to run over you, by the way. It does not get to run over you, by the way. This little pause can be a game changer for you. It can be a 5-second, 10-second pause. If you want extra credit, you can pause in the morning to start your day, to ground yourself well. And you can pause in the evening when you go to bed in gratitude, finding one thing to be grateful for. But even if you don't do those, I promise you, if you'll take a pause before anxiety just rolls right over you, before you start wondering, how am I going to fix it? How am I going to fix it? How am I going to have it? This pause will help. Kurt Thompson said that it takes less than 3 seconds for our brains to encode a memory of shame. And shame and anxiety travel together, by the way. While it takes anywhere from 30 to 90 seconds to encode a memory of love and joy. So if you want to experience the presence of God and to feel that God loves you, you're going to need more than 3 seconds. You're going to need a pause in the middle of the anxious moment. You're like, hold up. Let me pause. All right, so I encourage you, first of all, pause. Second thing I want to encourage you to do is this, to accept. This might be a little counterintuitive, and depending upon your background and church culture, you might actually resist this. That's okay. We can talk later. About it, but accept. What am I asking you to accept? I want to encourage you to accept where you are, not where you wish you could be. Let me put it this way. Let me just be very personal now. This morning, I'm worshiping with the song, and I'm starting to doubt whether all that I have to say is going to be helpful. Sometimes I don't realize it, but sometimes I catch my heart is racing a little bit more. I'm kind of beginning to wonder. Accepting says this, Tim, instead of condemning yourself, this, by the way, if you're a good Christian, been in church for a long time, the message of shame and condemnation comes on you in a hurry if you continue to wrestle with anxiety. What you're going to hear is you should be better than this by now. You're stronger than this, right? Don't give in to that. Just try harder, do more. What's wrong with you? Don't you know the Bible? You probably didn't pray enough this morning, did you? The shame and condemnation comes in a hurry. What can I do in that moment, even this morning? I can accept where I am. And here's what that looks like for me. It's like, God, I wish that I wasn't feeling anxious, but I am. Let me name it. I wish I wasn't here, but I am. Like, I'm going to ask you to carry me from here. See what I'm saying? This is acceptance. It's a radical self-acceptance, not of where you want to be, but where you are right now. Steve Cuss, you may have heard me talk about him. He runs a ministry called Capable Life, which I encourage you to get into if you're interested in anxiety and dealing with it. He puts it this way in his little book, The Expectation Gap. He says that accepting myself is keeping my soul open long enough to let the love of God seep in. It's in my weakness and my deficiency. Anxiety is pricking me and saying there's a future threat. It's coming in about 12 minutes. You'll be speaking in front of people and you might not deliver like you think you should. So get ready, gear up, defend, prepare. And in this moment, if I pause and accept where I am, it allows my soul to open to see the love of God for me in my own deficiency in the moment. And so I want to encourage you to accept, not just to keep punishing yourself that you aren't somewhere further down the line, but a radical self-acceptance says, this is where I am. I may wish I wasn't here, but I am here. Let me name it. This is where I am. And God, I'm going to ask for your help from here. Because I've heard you are with me and you're ahead of me. You're with me and you're ahead of me. Okay? Now, what leads from acceptance is another powerful word for me. And I've loved what this has done for me, and I hope it can be an encouragement to you. After we pause and accept, I want to encourage you to be curious, okay? I was going to use be curious, but then, like, pave yourself doesn't work as well as pace yourself, you know what I mean? So, pace yourself. I want to encourage you to be curious. What does that mean? I want to encourage you to allow yourself to ask, take my moment here, like, okay, what's going on in me, God? What's happening? Why am I still here? Before I condemn myself for not being far enough along, why am I still here? What's happening? I think, again, it was Steve Guss who talks about the power of curiosity as one of the most spiritually transformative realities that you can embrace. When you're curious instead of condemning, it allows you to begin to wonder and have freedom to say, what's actually happening to me? What's actually going on? You know, let me put it this way. For me, take that moment. Let's just keep picking on Tim for a minute, all right? In that moment, if I can reflect on it, and I'm honestly reflecting live with you this morning, but I think what's going on for me is this. I'm about to tell you a message. Deuteronomy 31:8. Remember the opening words? God is with you. He's going to walk with you. And I can't remember what they are right now, but, you know, okay. Now, I tell you I believe that, but in the moment, I'm not acting in that belief, because I think I have to be the one to deliver the goods, right? Right? You're allowed to nod again. Then you're a loser, I can say that. A joke around self, you know, a very violent word to use on myself, but I say it because I think we do that. We talk to ourselves that way. You should be better, right? You should be further along. You shouldn't still be that. Don't be that far off. So here's what happens. If I'm curious, I begin to ask, why am I there? And what I begin to realize is, you know what? I don't think that I've totally embraced the fact that God is present. I don't know that I totally believe what I'm about to tell you. Like, I don't know that I live that in all of my space. And so, God, I'm going to ask you now, would you reinforce this reality that through your Spirit you are present with me right now? That creates a different avenue for God to work and speak in me than if I'm just like, you know what? Tough it up. You're going to be all right. You'll figure it out. You've done it before. You see what I'm saying? Your curiosity will allow you to actually name some assumptions you make or some things that you say you believe that you actually don't believe. Same for me. I say that I believe that God is present, but there are times that I'm like, I'm living like I'm present, like, it's all dependent on me. It's all dependent on me in my future. That's how I actually live when anxiety overwhelms me. It's like it's all about me. That's how I live. I don't know if you can relate to that or not. But this curiosity, it will allow you to explore your own false needs before God. It will allow you to find the spaces in your life that are not settled yet on what you say you believe. The curiosity will invite you in a kind and compassionate. I can't encourage this enough. It's curiosity. It's so powerful. All right? Now, the last thing I'm going to say on the pace yourself, pause, accept, be curious, and I want to encourage you. Anxiety is fought this way. Anxiety is fought with enjoyment as well. I want to encourage you to enjoy. What do I mean by that? You're going to have to find some things that bring you delight. Some things that bring you delight. Some things that bring you joy. Some things that put a smile on your face. They might be things that you do, or they might be people that you talk to. It might be people that you talk to. In his ministry, Capable Life, Steve Cusk offers a resource I want to encourage you to look into. He calls it his life-giving list. If you don't have a life-giving list, I want to encourage you to think about that. It's a simple thing. It can include both inexpensive and expensive things. A life-giving list might be, you know what, in the morning, man, I need a cup of coffee. That gives me life. Doesn't cost a lot, depending on where you go. But that's what I need. Or when my kids go down to sleep, you know what I need? I just need 90 seconds of nothing. Doesn't cost anything. What a gift it is. Or you might be like, we've been, you know, I'm going to be working toward renovating a cabin or trying to buy a big thing or go on a vacation somewhere. It can be more expensive. It doesn't matter. The cost is immaterial. What a life-giving list is something that brings you back in a moment of anxiety. Say, okay, this is a practice. This is a person I might talk to, a thing I might do that I know brings me delight and joy. You're allowed to do that. Please do that. Please find those things, even if they're momentary, that you can enjoy and go after that way. What brings you delight? So, with that being said, I want to encourage you to pace yourself, to pause, to accept where you are, not where you want to be curious about what drives your anxiety and where you sit. Know this, condemnation and shame never heals anxiety. It never does. It just makes it worse. So be curious rather than condemning. And enjoy something. And keep in mind this, that while you're pacing yourself, I want you to know that God is with you and ahead of you. God is with you and ahead of you. You are not a self-pacer. You are walking with God, pacing yourself, and he is both with you and ahead of you. Jesus has come to undo the power of sin Adam brought to all of us being outside the garden. And God, through Moses and Joshua, says, I'm with you, and I'm going to be ahead of you. And Jesus is like, I'm with you. I'm ahead of you. I'm here to give you the gift of returning to the garden. So don't forget, God is with you, and he is ahead of you where anxiety is telling you you're not enough. So with that, I'd like to finish the series with a song by Ben Fuller called Walk With Me. And I hope it can be something that you can remember this week as you walk through your week and you walk with the Lord, you kind of walk along with all the fits and starts that we have as people. But listen to these words, and I hope they're encouragement to your soul to consider his desire, his plea, is that God will walk with him. He's like, on this journey of life, I don't want to walk alone. So will you walk with me? Will you walk with me? Will you walk with me? That's the call that Moses gave to Joshua to charge. God is with you. He's with you. Don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. So let's listen to Ben and we'll finish.
Thanks for listening today. I hope this message encouraged you to step more fully into God's story for your life. At Grace Point, we believe faith grows best in community. If today's message stirred something in you, maybe a question, a prayer, or a next step, we'd love to walk alongside you. You can connect with us or listen to more messages anytime by visiting gracepointparadise.com. Thanks again for joining us today. Have a great week, and remember, every story matters.